Simon and Andrew with James and John. Simon's mother-in-law lay sick with a fever. They immediately told him about her. He approached, grasped her hand, and helped her up. Then the fever left her, and she waited on them. It was evening after sunset. They brought to him all who were ill or possessed by demons. The whole town was gathered at the door. He cured many who were sick with various diseases, and he drove out many demons, not permitting them to speak because they knew him. Rising very early before dawn, he left and went off to a deserted place where he prayed. Simon and those who were with him pursued him, and on finding him said, "Everyone is looking for you." He told them, "Let us go on to the nearby villages, that I may preach there as well. For this purpose I have come." So we went into their synagogues, preaching and driving out demons throughout the whole of Galilee. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Again, in these early days of ordinary time, which began yesterday, we continue the central fruit of the Christmas season, which is that God is with us, that the incarnation perdures, and that we need to be aware that the Lord is with us as we go through each situation. Today, we see a snapshot in the life of Jesus, what Jesus did during his public ministry. What Jesus did is very much what Jesus still does, but we need to have that awareness strengthened by the Christmas season that we don't go through this alone, because what he's doing here, he still does for us. There were a few things that Jesus reveals to us today. I'm going to ponder mainly one, but let's just see it in context. Jesus left the synagogue. He had preached there all day. He really couldn't travel on the Sabbath. And as any pastor will tell you, on Sunday, if he celebrated three or four masses and really poured his heart into it, he would have been really drained. But as soon as he arrives, he begins with works of charity. They tell him about Simon Peter's mother-in-law, and he goes and he heals her. But it didn't stop there. As soon as it was evening and everybody could travel, they brought to him all who were ill or possessed by demons. The whole town was gathered at the door. The commentators believe that there were about 4,000 people in Capernaum at the time. And it's a tiny little house, if you've ever been there, because all the houses were tiny. What a commotion it would have been. And as I never cease to think, it would have been very easy for Jesus to do a group healing and then just rest. But his healings and his exorcisms were not just about the objective gift given, but it was about that intersubjective relationship he was trying to form through faith. And so he went by one, because the Good Shepherd knows each sheep by name and wanted them to know him and his personal love for them. One by one, the whole town, anybody who needed anything was there. I don't know what time he finished, but this was not a quick job. Maybe midnight, things finished. The commotion died down. He probably tried to get a little bit of shut-eye. But it says, rising very early before dawn. Rising in the Greek here, it basically means way before dawn. Not just very early and before dawn, but way before dawn. He went off to a deserted place where he prayed. This is the point we'll return to. Just let me round out the thought. But even after he received word that everyone was still looking for him, basically first thing in the morning, he didn't bask in the success of yesterday. He moved with love for others, wanted to go on to another place and do the same thing. But he was constantly on the move looking for charity so that people wouldn't be able to stay exactly where they were with him, but be able to recognize this holy impulse that wanted to bring his salvation personally to others too. Let's return to that thought about rising very early before dawn and going off to a deserted place to pray. This was more than just a worst-case scenario response. Jesus didn't have a chance to pray at other times, so he had to squeeze a little bit of time out of his sleep. It's far more than that. Nighttime means two things. First, it means a time that's undistracted. In the middle of the day, there's so much hustle and bustle. Nighttime is a time where, in terms of prayer, you don't have to battle all of that noise. But the second thing it signifies is it's quiet. It's hidden. That he wasn't praying for anybody else to see. In the depth of his heart, he sought this communion and sought it with a zeal that was far more important than what must have been a deep human need for sleep. That this was really a revelatory of his character. You know, I love the whole tradition of the Christmas Midnight Mass for this one reason, because at least once a year it teaches the Catholic world that God really is more important than sleep. Doesn't mean sleep isn't important, that we shouldn't take care of the bodies that God gave us with the built-in need for sleep. But that when push comes to shove and we're ranking our priorities, getting up in the middle of the night, reorging our entire schedule to be there with the Lord, is something that's very valuable to us. These thoughts about Jesus praying at night, praying in quiet without distraction, praying in secret to nourish his relationship with his Father according to his humanity, help us to understand something really key that occurs in the famous scene with Samuel in today's first reading. God could have appeared to young Samuel at any time of day. He is the Lord of time. Could have appeared instead of whatever blessing Samuel was taking in the morning, to show that he's more important than study. When he was in the midst of whatever work he would have been doing, helping around the temple, to show that he's more important than work. Could have appeared at high noon to show that he is the Lord of light. But when he first revealed himself to Samuel, he revealed himself in the middle of the night so that Samuel would be able to nourish his relationship with the Lord in his interior life without anybody else necessarily being able to observe it, and to do so that he wouldn't have any static as the Lord himself was speaking. This whole dialogue with Eli, we'll see tomorrow a little bit of the corruption of Eli and his sons. He wasn't the greatest teacher. It's kind of amazing that Samuel, who already, it says, was a minister to the Lord by this point in some way. He was old enough to be serving at the temple. He still was unfamiliar with the Lord. He hadn't been taught really who the Lord was yet. But the Lord had plans. The Lord was going to bring good out of all the omissions in the Temple of Shiloh at this time. He was at least having the chance to sleep next to the Ark of the Covenant. That ain't so bad. God can do his objective work even when we're unconscious of what he's doing. But then in the middle of the night, God cried out to him by name, Samuel, Samuel. And you can see the goodness of Samuel. Perhaps some of us would say, go away, I'm sleeping. I'm tired. Many of us, if we were that age, probably would have pretended as if we were asleep and we couldn't hear somebody calling. No, Samuel had a different attitude. Here I am. Then he ran to Eli. You called me. Prompt response. Eli, oblivious to what was going on, I didn't call you, go back to bed. And the situation repeated itself, as you know. But finally, it dawned on Eli what was happening. And he gave one of the best aspirations we will ever have. Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. When I would teach kids how to pray, which is a beautiful gift, I would always remind them that we have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Because prayer isn't so much the way a lot of us learn when we are taught to say our prayers. And we think that that's what prayer is, a series of vocal prayers that we ourselves say to the Lord. But prayer is fundamentally listening. It's primordially receptive rather than active. It opens itself up to God's word, God's work, before our word and our work. But this openness to the Lord speaking is something that we should nourish at night so that it can nourish our entire existence with the incarnate Lord, who continues to work full-time within us and at our side. Have you ever said before you go to bed to consecrate and essentially your sleep, speak, Lord, your servant's listening. If you wish to communicate anything to me tonight, even waking me up, even in my dream, all my time is yours. Speak, Lord, I'm attentive. This aspiration over the course of the day, if we just pause and say, speak, Lord, I'm listening right now, we become aware of the fact that God speaks to us throughout the day. We become conscious of the fact that he might be trying to communicate to us in one way or the other right then. And it changes the way we go about the day. Speak, Lord, your servant is listening. I would strongly urge you to say that at the beginning of the Liturgy of the Word. If you need to say it at the beginning of the first reading, and again at the Psalm, and again at the proclamation of the Gospel, or even at the homily, do it. What a beautiful aspiration at the beginning of our mental prayer, or at every recitation of the breviary, or at so many other times. Speak, Lord, your servant's listening as we begin another hour of work, so that we recognize that he's seeking to speak to us, if only we listen. It's one of the best aspirations, because it opens us up to the fact that God is always at work. The final thing we'll say is the responsorial psalm shows us that that listening is a listening not for information. It's not just a thing of courtesy. We listen to the Lord speaking, and when the Lord speaks, he speaks with words to be done. And that's why Samuel's words that are basically taken, from the Psalm, here I am, Lord, I have come to do your will, which were applied to Jesus in the letter of the Hebrews. This is the way that we seek to listen to the Lord. Speak, Lord, your servant's listening and ready and desirous of doing what you please, doing what you ask. The way we have learned how to do this is through Jesus himself, who went out very early before dawn to say to his Father, "Speak, Father, for your Son is listening." He was one who always listened so that he might do his Father's will rather than his own. And now he comes, and he wants us to listen very carefully as he says, "This is my body given for you." Praise be Jesus Christ.